Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Welcome to the Chamber Moneybank First Half 2017 Results Conference Call and Live Webcast. I'm Sarah, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to Mr. Robert Mayer, CEO, Mr. Remy Schimmel, CFO, and Mr. Volker Gloe, CRO of Chamber Moneybank. Please go ahead, gentlemen.
Everyone, and thank you for joining our half-year earnings call. This is Robert Oudmayer. I'm here with Remy, our CFO, and Volker, our Chief Risk Officer, and we do as usual, we give you a quick summary, and then we open for Q&A. I'd like to kick it off. If you look at the first half years, I think we can say we have solid results, and we are in line with our guidance. The environment is still a bit challenging. You know, we see, we have now 12 months of the new interest rate cap that we have been living to. We see the interchange fee going to be reduced from 70 basis points to 44 basis points at the first of August. However, we see also some good signals. Consumer confidence is improving, and for the first time, we see a stabilization or even a little small increase in the consumer loan market. So we haven't seen the total figures at the end, but we think that the market is recovering a little bit. And also inflation is turning positive, which we see as a good thing also for our business. If you look at Chamber, asset growth of 2% across business lines. So I think, you know, we especially on the P-loan side, personal loan side, we stopped the attrition completely. We launched the new what we call new Cumulus Micro Generation. So the new basically card or the updated card for Micro was successfully launched on time in the first of June. We talk a bit about Swiss billing afterwards, but the integration is progressing quite nicely. Losses, Volker is going to talk about afterwards, but, you know, very stable performance. 30 days at 1.9%, the NPL at 0.4%, and the loss ratio of 1%, and still a very competitive cost-income ratio of 43.3%, resulting in a net income of 69.4 million, or 2.46 per share, in line with the guidance, about 3% lower than last year. Return on equity, 16.9%, and basically delivering on our midterm targets. Capital, T1 capital, 20.2%. Excess capital, 83 million, above our T1 target of 18%. And we are reconfirming basically our policy to invest excess capital in growth or return it to shareholders as per the redefined capital policy. If you look at the markets on the next page, I just want to give you a bit of insight what happens there. I think the personal loan market was stabilizing or even improving a bit. There's still quite aggressive competition. We've seen some aggressive peers with even rates starting at 4.7%, more teaser rates than real market rates. I think that Chamber has been extremely stable on the personal loan market. You remember we closed about 7 branches last year. It didn't affect our volume, so we see more and more online attraction, and basically, the cost takeout and the reduction of the network we did not affect our volumes at all. So we are defending price, we're stabilizing assets, so I think we had a good first half year. We talk a little bit about the interest income later on, and the repricing, but we live now the first 12 months of the new rate caps, and we know a lot more than we know we knew 12 months ago. Look at credit cards market up 2%. When we went up 6% the number of cards, or even 11% year-over-year, our market share increased to 12%, so you continue to see a strong growth on the credit card side, with credit card fees up 16%. And, you know, strong volumes and, you know, a lot of NFC volume as well. We talk about NFC in a second, but we had a pretty successful first half year on the credit card side. If you look at auto, very stable, the market up a little bit, 0.6%. The used market stable at high, on a high level. Basically, our pricing and our asset base is extremely stable. We're defending price. There's still aggressive captives everywhere. We're defending price. Our market share is very, very stable and robust. A few words on payment technology we spoke a lot about in the past. You see, Apple Pay active in the Swiss market. There was a relaunch of Twint in Q2. Samsung Pay now also entered the market. We think that there's still a lot of players in the market and no winners. So we stick to the smart follower strategy. Even if you look at Apple, there are also some mixed comments from the US that is not really picking up a lot there. So we stick to the smart follower strategy. We are still the leader on NFC, so 20% of NFC transactions are done by Chembra, which is quite successful because also a lot of debit cards now have NFC, are NFC enabled. So we're still very strong. If you look at the market, I think it's a bit of a mixed message here. It's still challenging, but overall we're not unhappy with a recovery or a stabilization of the consumer finance market. A few words on business development. So we all know that the interchange is going down from 70 bips to 44 bips 1st of August. We have renewed the micro contract. One of the reasons was to address this lowering in interchange. We have increased the rates on overdraft from 9.9 to 11.95. We also reduced loyalty points for transactions outside the micro store from 1.2 to 1.3. If changes some fees, not a lot, but some fees have been changed, and for the customer, there's free cash withdrawal at the Miklos cashier as well. Overall, I don't think there's material financial impact, which in fact is very good news because most of our competitors have an impact of lower interchange, and we don't see that a lot. New is the strategic partnership with AnyFinance. AnyFinance is a pure online personal loan provider. They are a bit of a different segment than we are. Their pricing is lower than our pricing, so we start at 7.9. They advertised 5.9, 6.9. We refinance a 42 million personal loan portfolio. It's refinanced by an SPV, which is fully owned and consolidated by Chembra. So any finance will continue to service the portfolio. They also will continue to generate new personal loan assets. We have a clear set of rules on what conditions they can bring those assets in the SPV. Chembra will deliver their strengths, which is providing debt. So we have a possibility to fund ourselves quite good, as you see. And we also will provide a range of services of the SPV. I think about collection services there, something that we're really good at. So I think it is a good deal for both of us. We get some growth on our portfolio, but Eni will remain as an independent player in the Swiss personal loan market. So and we don't hit each other too much there. On the Swiss billing, quick update, we are on track. We're investing in really building scale there and building new products. So we've staffed up there. They had a pretty good first half year, I must say, though. They worked with 280 merchants. They financed almost 200,000 invoices in the first half. What we're doing is scaling the business, developing new products, and making it ready for the future. You also will see a loss this year, not material, but there will be a small loss this year on Swiss billing. And next year, we hope that we scale it up a bit more, and it's really building the future for Swiss billing. With that, I'm handing over to Remy, who is going to talk about the P&L on the next page.
Thank you, Albert. Good morning, everyone. I will start by walking you through the P&L and a deep dive of operating expenses before moving on to the balance sheet and an update on funding. So moving on to slide 6 and the P&L. Overall, our net income for the first half was 69.4 million versus 71.8 million, which translated to an EPS of 2.46 versus 2.55. Looking line by line, interest income was 151.1, down 8%, which was mainly driven by the introductions of the rate cap in July 2016, of which the impact will gradually flow through the P&L as the personal loan portfolio reprice at a lower APR in 17 and 18. Overall, the reduction in interest income was slightly offset by lower interest expenses of 12.6 million versus 14.2, as we continue to benefit from the low interest rate environment as we repriced and replaced maturing liabilities. But more detail on this on the funding will be provided on slide 9. Commission and fee income was up 6.7 million to 53.8 million. Which was driven mainly by higher credit card fees due to 11% year-on-year increase in the number of credit cards and various fee initiatives. We have a new disclosure here within commission and fee income, where we now report fee income from loan and leases and other. And the line title other includes fee income from the consolidation of the Swiss billing business. This two new line replace the category of personal loan and other used in prior reports. Provision for losses were 3% lower at 21.1 million, translating into a 1% loss rate, but Volker will guide you through the loss performance on slide 10 at a later stage. Operating expenses, which we'll review in more detail on the next slide, were down 2% to 83.3 million, mainly driven by lower marketing and rental costs. Now, looking at the key ratio for the first half, net interest margin was 6.7%, down from 7.3%, and basically reflecting the introduction of the rate cap introduced in July 16. Cost-income ratio of 43.3% with a return on equity of 16.9% and a 2.8% return on assets. Moving on to operating expenses on slide 7. So looking at the top, compensation and benefit increased slightly to 50.7 million, up from 49.9, which was mainly driven by the salaries and wages, as we incorporated 14 FTEs from the Swiss Billing acquisition. Professional services were up 1.4 million, mainly on the back of increased project costs to support an investment in digitization and simplification. Marketing costs were down 1.7 million to 3.3 million, mainly driven by higher advertising costs in 2016 to promote the introduction of the new rate, especially in the personal loan business. Collection and fees were down 6%, mainly driven by fewer post-payment fee incurred. Rental expense have reduced as a result of the branch closure in H1 16, but also there were lower head office related costs, as we have now completed the amortizations of the refurbishments when we moved into the premises. Information technology costs were down slightly, driven by timing and non-recurring project-related benefits in H1 17. Depreciation and amortizations was up 8%, primarily driven by the amortization of cost of intangible following the acquisition of Swiss Billing. Looking at the headcount, as you can see from point 8, FTE have increased to 715, up from 702, which is mainly driven by the primarily driven by the additional 14 FTEs incorporated from the acquisition of Swiss Billing, with Sembra on a like-for-like basis, FTE remaining flat at 701. Overall, with total OPEX of 83.3 million, we have maintained an healthy cost-income ratio of 43.3%. Moving on to the balance sheet now on page 8. The balance sheet was stable at 4.9 billion, slightly up 50 million or 1% compared to December 16. Looking at the assets, cash and equivalents reduced by 56 million to 613, mainly due to a 2% increase in receivable and to the payment of the dividend of 125.5 million in May this year, which were partly offset by 150 million secure bond issuance in June, and overall we maintain a strong liquidity position in advance of debt maturity in H2 17 and for the initial funding of the SPV. Net financing receivable of 4.2 billion were slightly up 2% versus December, with growth across all businesses line. We have successfully defended our market share in the personal loan and auto market, with receivable up 1% for both businesses line in H1 17. Credit card receivables were up 61 million or 9% compared to December, driven by the continued growth in the credit card business. And here again, the new category other include the consolidation of the Swiss billing receivable. On the liability side, we had a 3% increase in third-party funding, primarily driven by the 150 million bond issuance in June, which was partially offset by 50 million bank loan repayment, with our deposit base remaining stable. But we will look at deeper into our funding base onto the next slide. Finally, the overall reduction in equity was driven by the total dividend payment to shareholders of 125.5, which was processed in May, and which was slightly offset by 69.4 million net income generated in H1. Moving on to the funding now. And as mentioned earlier, total funding was up 3% compared to December to just 4 billion, as we seek to maintain a strong liquidity position while at the same time taking advantage of the low interest rate environment to further optimize our funding costs. So just to recap, two key main movements that occur since year-end. We had 150 million senior unsecured 8-year bond issued in June, and the repayment of the 50 million bank loan also that happened in June. So overall, we have continued to reduce our funding cost and maintain an adequate mix of funding sources throughout the first part of the year, bringing down the overall funding cost to 62 basis points from 66, and increasing the average remaining term by 2 months to 2.9 years. With that, I would like to hand over to Volker, who shall provide you an update on risk.
Thanks, Remy, and good morning, everyone. On losses, we again can show a very stable picture. We report provision for losses at 21.1 million for the first half of 2017, which corresponds to a loss rate of 1.0%. This is in line with what we have seen in prior periods as well. Also, asset quality metrics have again been very stable. We report 30-plus delinquencies at 1.9% and the NPL ratio at 0.4%. On portfolio level, there are a few slight movements, as indicated on the right-hand side of the slide, which is mainly driven by a mix of segments underneath these portfolios, but the compounded picture is very, very stable. In the first half of 2017, we continued to optimize loss mitigation processes, leading to the maintenance of a robust asset quality. And with that, we also can reaffirm our loss guidance for the full year, where we said already in the beginning of the year that we expect loss performance to be in line with prior years. And with that, I can hand it back to Remy.
Thank you, Volker. So now moving on slide 11 to look into the overall capital position. So we ended the half year with a core tier 1 of 20.2%, which is up 20 basis points from December, and remaining above our 18% minimum target. Risk-weighted assets increased slightly 2%, in line with the growth of the receivable across all businesses. Consequently, excess capital stood at 83 million, as we had reserves from capital contribution of 84.8 million, which is designated for future ordinary dividend payment. Regarding the A&E finance deal I announced earlier, we anticipate the initial transactions to consume circa 6 million of Tier 1 capital based on the 18% minimum target, which will increase overall the risk-weighted assets by approximately 32 million when we apply our 75 straight-line rule. So overall, we remain pretty well capitalized as we move into the second half of the year. And with that, now I would like to hand over to Robert for an update on the outlook and guidance for 2017.
Yeah, thank you, Remy. So if you look at our medium targets, I think we delivered on all four medium targets. Asset growth at 2.4%, which was probably a bit better than expected for some of you. Very solid profitability of 60.9%, capitalization 20.3%, and a dividend payout between 60% and 70% of net income. If you look at the full year,
2017. We basically confirm everything what we said earlier. So lower interest rate income from personal loans due to the introduction of the rate cap, continued growth in credit cards, and a very competitive cost-income ratio, which is in line with what we have seen so far. For the full year, confirmation of the guidance, a EPS in the range between 470 and 5 Swiss francs, and the losses in line with prior year's performance, around 1%. With that, I'd like to open it up for questions.
The first question is from David Hart, Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Dave Hart from Kepler here. I have a couple of questions, mainly on the business development and one also on the IT costs. This any finance seems to make a lot of sense in terms of maybe diversifying your portfolio, but as you rightly highlighted, the rates that are being charged are lower. And I just want to see what the rationale behind is. Should we maybe assume going in the long term, if you acquire more assets from, or we could grow the asset base from that point of view, a lower margin, as that business typically charges lower rates compared to what you guys are at the moment. And maybe a second point on the Swiss billing on the update. You guys talked about scalability and maybe a loss for this year, but what is the long term vision in regards to the business once it's fully scaled up? What kind of revenue should we anticipate from this business going forward? And thirdly and lastly, it's on the IT cost. You mentioned that there should be a bit of a catch up in H2 in 17. Should we assume a slightly higher run rate compared to last year? I think we were around the 24.1 million. Should we expect that sort of same level or a bit higher going forward?
Okay, thank you, David, and good morning. Three questions, so I will take the first two on the BD side, on the Swiss billing, and then Remy will take the third one. First on the anyone, look, one of our strengths is that we can fund ourselves very competitively, and we also have a very strong back-end services like collections. So any for us is not a direct competitor because they operate in a different market segment. So it gives you growth. It gives us assets. The way we calculate it is not the same way as we do it with personal loans. We look at what kind of ROE do we get, and it's above the 15% ROE, so it is within our target. And I think it's an interesting model. No, if you can grow on the funding side, basically, with people who are in the same business but not direct competitors, it could be a test and learn model if it works for us. So I think it is a 42 million asset base. Maybe it will grow a little bit, but I also think we should think in the future if that could be a BD road for us, where we still can generate a very healthy ROE, which in line with the total ROE, but it's a bit different because we don't have the whole front there. On the Swiss billing side, look, we're not guiding for the long term here. So the idea is, I can't tell you what the long term revenue is going to be on Swiss billing. I think the invoice financing is a very interesting market. It is growing market as well. I think it is also a very good lead generator for consumer finance. So what we're trying to do is really give it scale. So when we bought that business, there was one sales guy in there, there were two operational guys. So we're scaling it up. We're trying to build some new products. And I think over time, it should generate a reasonable income. So I cannot exactly tell you what is going to be the income in 19 or 20 because we're not guiding for those years. But it needs to get scale because you don't do an acquisition for not getting scale. But I think we need to give it 12 to 24 months to give it scale and to integrate it. And then we'll see how much it can give us. On the IT cost, Remy, you should take that one.
Okay, yes, thank you. Good morning, David. Yeah, I mean, you're right. Last year was 24. Now, when you look at the slightly lower run rate, if you just divide the numbers between the two together, look, we don't want to guide line by line, but what you see here is probably kind of a run rate. It's a little bit undervalued in H1 because there was some delays in spendings, but I would expect that to catch up in H2. So if you look between last year we already said it was pretty run rate and pretty stable. So last year is a good benchmark.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome.
The next question is from Martin Amis from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for the presentation. I have two questions, please. Firstly, on the net interest margin, if you could give us a bit more color on market dynamics and then maybe in terms of market share changes. Obviously, average receivables in personal loans were down 2%. At the same time, the balance sheet position is up 1%. NII down 8%. If you just could give us a bit more color, what is happening in the market or what has happened in the market? Are you working less with agents? Are you seeing more inflows on your own channels? And then how is pricing developing in the market and then on your side? Secondly, on professional service costs, I'm just curious whether the 1.4 million increase is here to stay. Is this the run rate now, or is this something that will fall away in the second half or maybe next year? And maybe a third question, if I may, on deposits. Retail deposit balances are slightly lower now. Is this a conscious management decision from your side, or is this slightly demand-driven? And where do you feel comfortable with the level of retail deposits? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Martin. I'll answer the first one on the NIM, and then Amy will talk about professional services and about the deposits. Look, a bit more color on the market dynamics. I think in general we work a bit less with agents, which is true. So I think the whole interest rate cap has moved us a little bit away or a bit less focusing on agents because we don't pay the full commission anymore. And there are some competitors in the market who are paying more commission than we do. At the same time, our rates are more competitive, so we get more inflow from our direct business, what I would say. Also, you really see a pickup on the online side, so you see more and more online. I think one of the things we've seen on the market dynamics is that repricing has been a bit faster than probably most of us thought it would be. You see that a lot of people has repriced in the first half of this year. We think that the total repricing, the vast majority of the personal loan portfolio will be repriced this year in total. So I cannot guide you completely how much it is, and we don't even know how much it is, but it is faster than probably most of you think. You will see a vast majority of the portfolio repriced by the end of this year. So I think this is the year of repricing. The other thing what you typically see in our business is that we're building up assets in May, June. So normally you see a bit of higher interest income in the second half than the first half. If you look before the rate cap, so if you look back in the years, you always see that the second half of the year gives a bit of a higher interest income than the first half of the year. You basically benefit from July, August, September from higher assets. Then you see a lot of repayments in December because people get the 13 months, the extra month of salary and the repay. So that effect hasn't gone. However, you know, you will see some more impact from the personal loan portfolio. You also see some impact from the credit card portfolio because we're pricing now 85% of the portfolio at 11.95 instead of 9.9. So that started in June as well. So it's a bit of puzzling, you know, and I can't guide you completely. But, you know, I think the most important message is that repricing has gone quite fast and you're coming pretty much to a win rate soon on the personal loan. Hope that helps you a little bit. I know that it's not completely properly, but Amy.
Okay. Matthew, just to on the professional services and retail deposit. So on the professional services, we're not guiding line by line. What I can say is, as per the guidance we issued last year, we said that we're expecting to have a slight increase in G&A because we're embarking on a series of projects to simplify the business and deliver some efficiency across the organization. So what I could say is you probably would see a marginal increase of 2 to 3% between H1 and H2 on the G&A space. On the retail deposit question, yes, this was a conscious decision that we took in order to further optimize our overall funding portfolio and especially to recalibrate the mix between institutional and retail. So what we've done is we've actually reduced our offer. We've reduced the number of products we have on the retail side. So we've removed the 3 year available for general public, shall I say, and we've removed the 4 years. And we've kept the 5, 6, and 7 years onto the market, but I've reduced the rate as well. So if you look now into the league table, you know, we're not just the most expensive one when it comes to this. We're, you know, number one or number two compared to other financial institutions in Switzerland. So what that does enable us to do is to slightly reduce the overall tech on the retail side, and therefore to reduce the overall cost of funds, because it's one of the most expensive sources of funding that we have. And we've shifted it towards the institutionals, where we see more appetite to go longer the curve with continued low interest rate also. So that's pretty much what we've done. We also, as I've highlighted earlier, we tapped into the DCM market also to further optimize the consolidated or the wholesale funding approach.
But I mean, you shouldn't expect it to go on much down. I think the 900 million is a bit of what we like it to me. We don't advertise for it at all, but it should probably stabilize more or less.
Okay. Thank you very much. This was very helpful.
Okay. Thank you, Navid.
The next question is from Jan Schöps, Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Many thanks for the presentation and taking my question. I have a couple of follow-up questions. First one being on the partnership with NE Finance. What volumes could we be looking at? And also, you said that it comes at a yield roughly, let's say, 200 basis points lower than you. So how do you make sure, or like, what kind of quality are these loans, and how do you make sure you're getting the good quality loans when you buy these portfolios? What kind of loan loss provisioning rate are we looking at here? Second question being on the yields. We have seen quite a strong decline in personal loans. You already commented on it, but when we speak of look at the repricing of the portfolio, how much actually of the personal loan portfolio has been repriced over, let's say, the last 12 months? In other words, what could we be looking at in the yield trend? And then also on the credit cards, I see that the yield has decreased by about 40 basis points. Could you elaborate a bit on the reason for that, please?
Okay, I think the first question from any on the losses is for Volker. Second one goes to Remy, so
second and third, yeah.
Yeah, I think on any finance and how the deal is structured, I mean, as Robert mentioned in the presentation, we set up an SPV. So the funding goes through the SPV, meaning that the assets that come into SPV, they are controlled. There are so-called eligibility criteria that ensure that the quality of assets coming into the SPV is within our expectations. And also there is a set of concentration limits to further monitor and control the quality of the assets that go into this portfolio. I mean, obviously, when any finance is very attractive to consumers on the pricing, you can imagine that the risk appetite that they have is also quite limited. And with these set of criteria, we control this this appetite so that we understand what assets we are funding. And as also mentioned, I mean, this is a segment in the market that we are not really playing in, so there is no kind of competition from Cembra and any finance in that. And again, we control the assets. So from a loan loss provision, we can probably benchmark to the better part of our own portfolio. So we don't expect kind of material worsening as a consequence of this SPV.
But even there now, we're talking about 42 million. Well, it's small if you look at the total portfolio. So the impact, whatever it is going to be small. Remy?
Yeah, okay. Thank you. So the question on the yield and regarding the personal loan over the past 12 months, I think we should use 18 months because, over the past 12 months. But if you look at just also before, slightly there was early adopters. What you would see normally on that portfolio is you would see the repricing curve, the velocity of it accelerating in the first 12 months and then slightly reducing. There will still be some repricing going through, but consequently, on the three-year portfolio or average, you know, contract on a behavioral basis, you would imagine that the vast majority of the portfolio would reprice within the first 18 months of the cycle. So we are currently expecting for the vast majority of the portfolio to reprice by the end of this year. The impact it's having, I mean, we can't guide you on that, but if you think about it, you know, the APR was 12.5%, 12% before. APR now is going to be between 9 and 10. Following the rate cap, it's a 1.7 billion portfolio.
So you can cover the total impact, and you get compensated partly by credit cards, where you have an increasing portfolio, and you have also an increasing yield there.
Yeah. So there are slightly offsetting items, especially on the interest income line, as Robert mentioned on the credit card being one. But what you've seen, the second question you've asked on that one, which also related to the credit cards, there's effectively a slight reduction, and it was mainly due to basically an overall reduction in the rates. That is expected not to continue because I'm sure you have noticed we've also increased our APR on the credit card business, which is now 11.95 as opposed to 9.95 before. So that's part of the also launch of the new generations with Migros and the other cards we have.
Many thanks. Follow up, please. I don't quite understand. Have you changed the pricing on existing cards? And I mean, not the new Cumulus card, but I mean on let's say your own cards, Conferama. Or how do we get these 40 basis points yield compression in the credit card business?
There's two things. The first one, the compression, there hasn't been a decrease in the headline rate, in the headline APR. There's been an increase that was announced a couple of months ago, and that is now live. The overall, how the credit card would work is you would, first of all, you have an increase in the overall interest income, but the balances have increased faster than the overall. So if you look at the average balances of the portfolio on the credit card was lower year on year, but the overall volume transacted was higher, so which translates into the fee and commission income line. So you can't just look at it in isolation. It's a combination of the two.
Great. Many thanks.
Okay.
The next question is from Daniel Regli from MainFirst. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for taking my question. I have just one question remaining. Could you maybe give us an indicative share of credit cards commission, which is generated by domestic transaction fees? Thank you.
No, we've never done that, Daniel. I'm sorry. That's a good question. And it's the $1 million question. We've never shared how much of our domestic volume is Migros and how much is non-relatable. This will be highly sensitive competitive information. I think everybody wants to know that. Look, we get less affected by the interchange because a part of our volume is going through Migros, and Migros is not affecting the interchange. We have never shared how much that is, and we're not going to share that. I'm very sorry about that.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
The next question is from Andreas Grün from Mirabaud Group. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I have also three questions, please. You were talking about the new Cumulus card generation. What's the advantage of that? What's the positive impact for Cembra on that card? And then you were talking about lower marketing costs. Is that a temporary effect? And thirdly, on page 5, you write overall non-material financial impact expected. Is that only related to the domestic interchange fee? And maybe, if I may, fourth question, could you please elaborate what effect you would expect in an environment of increasing interest rates, like sensitivity on the P&L would be perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay, Andreas, four questions, but we'll answer them all. I'll take the first three, and then Remy takes the increasing interest rate environment. So on the Cumulus card new generation, what you see is that we know that interchange has come down from 95 to 70 to 44. So you want to mitigate that because we also lose some interchange there. What we do is we pay in for the loyalty. So basically the loyalty outside Migros, the spend is paid by us. So what we have lowered the loyalty from, we went from 2 to 1 to 3 to 1. So we basically give less points, we pay less loyalty in, so we have less cost on this one. That compensates a part of the interchange. So overall, we also increased the APR. So we're mitigating basically the interchange that we're losing on Migros. And I think, you know, the beauty of our business, we can do this. Because if you have a credit card business and you only have interchange and annual fees, you can do this thing. We can mitigate in the deal with Migros some of those things to limit the impact of the lower interchange. That's also why we say, and that was the second question, you know, the third question, is not material. In fact, though, we don't have a negative impact because most of the credit card companies see a negative impact from interest from interchange lowering. We don't have that issue that much. So that's why it's not material. On the marketing expense, what you typically saw last year is that we overspent a bit on marketing in the first half because we have the new rate cap, so we went on TV for the first time, you know, and we really were very present. Our typical marketing cost is normally between 7 and 8 million a year. So that's what we typically do. Last year we spent 5 in the first half year, which was much higher than normal. So we basically go back to a new run rate, to the normal run rate. So now this is what it has been over the last couple of years. It's going to be this year as well. Last year's first 6 months were exceptional because we had this introduction of the new interest rate cap. Increasing interest rates, I mean?
Yeah, sure. So a couple of items here. The first one is one of the mitigating actions that we have is we are funding longer. So if you look now, we've increased the average remaining maturities from 2.7 years to 2.9 years. So that's number one. Then within the funding portfolio, we have some fairly efficient, cheap vehicles like the ABS. Okay, it takes some time to deliver and to execute, but it's relatively cheap because it's backed. So that's probably one of the cheapest instruments you would have should there be an increase in interest rate and in inflation over time. The second aspect, here we asset liability match in terms of maturity, especially, of course, when we look at the auto book and the P-loan book. So, you know, between 2, 7, 3 years. The credit card business you can reprice. It's completely different and independent on the maturity here and on the turning of the book. The third element into the response here is the rate cap. Effectively, the introduction of the rate cap has enabled us to mitigate any upside risk in some ways because now, if you look before, it was capped at 15% full stop. And now it's 10% and 12% above 3 months LIBOR. So if LIBOR increases, every year there's the options to set the target, the ceiling, above and increase it de facto. So then you would be able to increase the overall headline rate. Fourthly, it really depends on the behavior you would want to do and how the competitor would react into the market, but also what would be their funding position and situation. Some of them we need to refinance quite quickly, so suddenly the cost of funds would go up, so the headline rates would need to go up. It really also depends on how the external market would react.
I mean, in general, we like, Andreas, we like a bit of increasing interest rate as long as it goes slowly. Nobody likes big peaks in the market, but I think we are basically match funded. Not everybody is that in the market, so we're not the first one to reprice. And if it goes up step by step, it's not bad at all.
All right. Thank you.
The next question is from Tim Dawson from Elvea. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much. Just a brief one, just to come back on the loan loss provision. Within the segments, obviously the standout thing is the decline in the 30 days personal loans. Is that because you've sort of had to slightly upgrade the quality of the portfolio in response to the interest rate cap, and therefore it's something we could be sustainable, or am I just really reading too much into kind of random fluctuation half year to half year.
Typical question for Paul.
Yes, thanks for the question. No, I mean, you're right, 30-plus delinquency on P-loan, the first half is developing slightly better. Reason why, I think it's a mix of a bit fluctuation and variation that we just see on this metric, because it's never a completely stable picture. But I think there is also an effect of that we cut out some segments as a consequence of the rate cap that are no longer profitable for us. When this is said, this exercise of checking the profitability at kind of specific score levels or at kind of risk appetite levels that we have, this is a continuous exercise. So we always try to optimize the risk that we are taking on the book to ensure that we are paid for the risk that we are taking.
Great, thank you.
There are no further questions at this time.
Okay, I would like to thank you for all your valuable questions and for the participation on this call. Any follow-up, as always, you can contact Christian or Remy for any follow-up questions, you know that. For now, thanks for listening in, and I'll have a good day, everybody.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you for choosing Chorus Call, and thank you for participating in the conference. You may now disconnect your lines. Goodbye.